This is an ad by Regain Couples Therapy.
Let's be honest. Loving your partner doesn't mean you always like them, and guess what? That's normal. Regain offers couples therapy that's flexible, affordable, and 100% online.
Whether you're reconnecting or working through conflict, Regain is here to support you both.
See why people wish they'd try couples therapy sooner. Visit regain.com/couplespod to get 10% off your first month. That's regain.com/couplespod.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams 4th of July sale and get 30% off paints and stains June 27th through July 7th. With prices starting at $34.29, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
What terrifying confession has someone told you while intoxicated? Story 1. I was hanging out with an older guy I had recently started working with as a butcher in a grocery store. After a couple of beers, he began telling me that he had spent 17 years in prison. He got out 2 years ago, and this was his first job ever, at 64 years old. I got curious and asked what had happened, if it wasn't too personal. Without hesitation, he simply replied, "I cut him down with an axe, that piece of trash. And now he's a butcher. I guess he really enjoys his job." Story 2. I was showering off my blackout drunk father because he had soiled himself, when he suddenly started crying and confessed that he had been pinned down and assaulted by his brother's friends. I was 16 when this happened. He worked an early shift, so he was always home when I got back from school, usually drunk about 4 days a week. He was never abusive or angry, just distant. But in that moment when he blurted it out, I could see the pain and burden he had been carrying through his tears. I was obviously in shock, so I just let him cry and talk while I listened. I finished washing him off and got him to bed, where he slept it off. He was completely blackout drunk, so I knew he wouldn't remember the conversation, and I kept it to myself. Other than my therapist, I've never told anyone until now. He blamed himself, and unfortunately, there is still a stigma around men admitting to having experienced such trauma. But it does happen, and it needs to be acknowledged. My father coped with it in an unhealthy way for a long time. Whether he ever got proper help, I'll never know. But he's been sober for over 20 years now, and is much more present in our family's life. Story 3. My father endured ongoing abuse from his three older half-brothers throughout his childhood, so they wouldn't harm his little sister. As a result, he grew up battling addiction to drugs and alcohol, due to the pain and anger he carried from years of trauma. He eventually found a therapist in his late 40s who helped him start the healing process. I remember how he would come home from sessions, shut himself away, and not want to talk. Years later, he finally told me about the abuse, and then I understood why those therapy sessions were so difficult. He had to relive all of it. It breaks my heart just thinking about it. He hasn't touched drugs or alcohol in about 4 years. He had a brief relapse with alcohol after my brother's passing. Still, he is the kindest, most compassionate man I've ever known. Even if he had only a single dollar left, he'd give it to someone in need. He's helped me through so much and accepted me completely. He's not my biological father. He came into my life when I was 8, but he chose to be my dad every single day. I love him with all my heart. Story 4. During my freshman year of college, among the many new friends I made, there was one guy who was always joking around, very laid back, casual, and always down for anything. The biggest red flag was that whenever people were drinking and hanging out, he would always black out. He drank way too much and would stumble around like a rag doll. One night after a party had wound down, a few of us asked him, while we were all still a bit tipsy, why he always drank to such extremes. With his head drooping and speech slurred, he told us that just a few months earlier, during the summer before college started, his best friend had called him. They lived in a small town by the beach, and his friend asked him to come watch the sunset with him. He biked over. They sat down and talked for a while. Everything seemed normal. Then his friend pulled out a pistol and took his own life right in front of him. My friend had to call the police while covered in blood and fragments, completely in shock. And just a few weeks later, he moved to another state for college, still numb and unable to sleep or concentrate. He never remembered telling us that story, and none of us brought it up again. His drinking habits didn't change until just before graduation, when he finally started going to therapy. He got a job right after finishing school and seems to be doing much better in the years since. Story 5. This was about 6 months ago. My brother and I were drinking one night because it was the weekend and we just wanted to unwind and play video games. We had done plenty of shots and had several drinks. We were completely out of it. We were having fun playing some old World at War zombies for nostalgia, and we paused the game to grab some chips. As I was grabbing the salsa, he told me that he had tried to end his life about a month earlier. He had taken some pills, and they had to pump his stomach. He said that the whole time he kept thinking of me, and how devastated and depressed I would be if he had died, and that he never wanted to lose me. I told him that I had also been in that place once, and thought the exact same thing about him. We continued playing zombies while talking about everything imaginable, and since that night, we've spoken every single day without missing one. We're both doing a lot better now and are both in therapy. It's nice having someone to talk to and trust about these things. Story 6. One time, an old acquaintance, F49, and I, M32, were drinking late into the night. She drank much faster than I did, and before long, she randomly and drunkenly confessed something to me. When her aging and sick mother, whom she deeply resented and found extremely difficult to care for, was left in her care, she intentionally withheld some medications and gave her too much of others, with the intention of ending her life. It worked. She told her siblings that the illness must have finally taken its toll and that their mother passed in her sleep. Since their mother was already elderly and ill, there was no autopsy. A minute later, she seemed to snap out of it and apologize profusely for telling me, adding that I was the only person she had ever told. Story 7. My ex in college once told me, while he was blackout drunk, that a few years earlier, he and a group of kids broke into a house to have a party. The family who lived there was away on vacation or something. I'm not sure how they picked the house or knew it would be empty. Sorry, it's been like 12 years and I've forgotten some details. They all got drunk and someone thought it would be funny to break a picture on the wall. Then someone else did the same. Eventually, it spiraled into them, destroying the entire house. Everything they could. All the windows were broken. They broke the legs off the chairs and used them to punch holes in the walls. They stole and ripped clothing, tore or burned all the family photos and more. I don't remember everything he said they broke, but I remember him crying, saying they ruined those people's lives and that there was no way to make it right. I honestly think he was so intoxicated that he didn't remember telling me, because we never mentioned it again. Anyway, about 2 years later, he punched me in the face for asking for a ride to work one too many times. So I guess he wasn't a great person regardless of his past or substance use. Story 8. My great-grandfather served in World War II. He never spoke about it. If you asked him, he would politely get up, grab his drink, and leave the room. But after my first deployment to Afghanistan, he called me and said, "I can finally talk to someone." I started spending a lot of time with him. I'd tell him my stories and he would share his. During one of my visits home on leave, we spent the night drinking together. After a while, he told me about the time his unit discovered a small concentration camp. He explained that they weren't all as large as Auschwitz. The first thing he remembered was the smell, so strong it made him nearly vomit multiple times. This camp didn't have ovens or gas chambers. When they entered from the north side, there was a pit that had been dug out. Inside were what he believed to be thousands of decaying bodies. He was sure that the ones at the bottom were just skeletons by then. People they spoke with said that the Nazis lined up individuals at random and executed them, letting the bodies fall into the pit. Some people, starving to death, had even thrown themselves in, hoping the fall would end their suffering instantly. Knowing the Allies were approaching, the German soldiers had locked the gates, taken or poisoned the food, and dumped dead bodies into the water supply. The disease and infection were so widespread that many of the soldiers in my great-grandfather's unit were afraid to help. He told me that of everything he had experienced, that moment was the worst. It tore him apart, and those people haunted his dreams. He felt like he hadn't done enough, that every day their unit couldn't push the line forward was another day those people were left to suffer. My great-grandfather was proud of his service, and he lived a good life. He passed away in 2011 at home, peacefully watching his favorite show. Story 9. On my birthday, I got really drunk at home with friends and let slip my most devastating memory from my time in the military. That's really the source of my PTSD. While in Afghanistan, my unit came across a stray herd of goats in an area where we regularly met with an informant who was a shepherd. We found a mass of 17 decaying bodies that turned out to be the entirety of the man's nomadic clan. It was believed that the Taliban discovered he was helping us, so they executed the entire group and left them to rot. I spent most of a week burying the bodies. Some had been decapitated, including one child. I think my friends were arguing about Ukraine, and I was so drunk and frustrated. None of them had seen the horrifying realities of war. So much of it is just a headline to people. Eat it. This kind of took off, so I wanted to add some context and thank everyone for the kind words and support. I was 19 when this happened, and it became a turning point in my life. I decided not to renew my enlistment because of it. I know the conflict in Ukraine is different from the war in Afghanistan, but I was drunk and have always resented how so many Americans promote violence abroad without ever seeing it.
This is an ad by Regain Couples Therapy and features real testimonials.
This was our first time trying therapy, and honestly, it was long overdue. Looking back, we just wish we had started sooner.
Regain's qualified therapists help couples when they can't get there on their own.
We thought it was intimacy issues, but Andrea helped us uncover a deeper root cause we hadn't even realized was there.
Visit regain.com/couplespod to get 10% off your first month. Regain, couples therapy that works.
Lowe's knows that no matter your paint project, saving is at the top of your list. That's why when you shop today, you can buy one, get one free, select Valspar and HGTV Home by Sherwin-Williams one coat coverage interior paints via rebate. Shop these deals in-store or online today at Lowe's. We help, you save. Rebate in form of Visa gift card equal to 100% off the second eligible item purchased before or after applicable discounts, if any. See details. Offer ends 7/9.
Consequences firsthand. After that deployment, while stationed in Germany, I learned that the way we buried the victims didn't align with Islamic or Pashtun traditions. I didn't know that at the time, but I always suspected the event was hidden from the Afghan people to avoid questions about U.S. involvement in informant networks, especially now that the Taliban are back in power. I've carried personal regret ever since. Part of my job involved coordinating information requests for operational intelligence. Sometimes this meant using informants, though the details weren't always shared with me. I live with the painful possibility that, while I was sitting at a desk trying to complete a PowerPoint presentation, I may have contributed to the horrific deaths of innocent people. Story 10. They didn't tell me this while drunk, but I think it fits here. I volunteer at a nursing home, and when one of the female residents was nearing the end of her life, she confided something heartbreaking. Her husband once cheated on her with the neighbor's wife. When the neighbor's husband found out, he was furious and intended to hurt her husband. But instead, they came to a disturbing agreement. The neighbor's husband would not harm her husband if he could return the favor. In short, her husband agreed to let the neighbor have her in exchange for his own safety. It gets worse. She later became pregnant and told her husband for the rest of his life that the child was his, though she strongly believed it was the neighbor's. She carried this emotional weight for her entire life. Her son's paternity and the betrayal of being treated like a possession. It was truly a heartbreaking conversation. Story 11. My brother got extremely drunk 2 years ago at Thanksgiving. He had like 7 or 8 beers. At first he seemed fine, but then he started sobbing, and I was the one comforting him for over 3 minutes. He opened up about his struggles with depression and how he felt left behind compared to his friends' relationships and happiness. He said he was genuinely happy for them, but also deeply sad that he couldn't experience that kind of joy. He admitted he had thought about ending his life, but said he was too scared because he didn't want me to be alone. That night was a turning point. I was finally able to help him get on antidepressants. He also brought up something from when we were around 6 years old. He had put gum in my hair, and we had to cut it off. He was sobbing, calling himself a terrible brother, and saying I didn't deserve that. I didn't even remember it happening, and I ended up with short hair anyway, so I didn't care. He's doing much better now and hasn't gotten that drunk again. I love my brother so much. I think I'm going to give him a hug. Story 12. Just a warning, this one is kind of disturbing and maybe upsetting for those sensitive to stories involving harm to animals. During my freshman year of college, a guy who lived on my hall, I'll call him Rick, seemed like a pretty nice guy. He had a charming personality, though he could be a bit over the top and too much at times, but most people liked him. A few months into the school year, Rick decided to secretly keep a bunny in his closet as a pet. It was actually his roommate's girlfriend, who mostly cared for the bunny, and she loved it deeply. This went on for several weeks, but one day, the bunny was just gone. I asked around to see what had happened, but no one would say anything. Then a few nights later, while everyone was drinking, Rick's roommate's girlfriend suddenly confronted him and accused him of killing the bunny. That's when the truth started to come out. Slowly, a group of intoxicated students, myself included, learned that Rick had harmed and taken the life of the bunny over the course of several hours. He admitted to having those kinds of urges and said he had done similar things before. He even asked me if I'd buy him another animal since he wasn't allowed to anymore. It was a horrifying situation, and honestly, we should have taken action and done more. I still wonder how many more animals he may have hurt. Story 13. Last night, my best friend told me she loved me and wanted me to leave my wife. I've known her since grade school, and I felt sick hearing that. I don't even know if she remembers, because this morning she texted me about a new manga release that she thought my wife would like. Edit. I spoke to my wife. She got home a few hours ago and had actually gone to my friend's house to pick up my guitar and switch, which I had left there. My friend was quiet and seemed like she had just woken up, so I wonder if she's anxious about how to handle everything. I told my wife what happened. She cried a little about her relationship with our friend, but was mostly focused on how I was feeling. She told me to wait before making any decisions about cutting the friend off and encouraged me to talk things through before acting. We also read through a lot of the comments here, which sparked important conversations. There were a few more specific and uncomfortable things my friend said that I didn't post here, but my wife wants to talk to her about those later, after I've had the conversation I need to have first. For those worried that I'd leave my wife, please don't be. The idea is laughable. My wife has no competition. No one compares to her. There is absolutely no one as amazing or as wonderful as my wife, and I'm never going to forget that. Thank you all for the support and advice. It's meant more than I expected from a random post. Story 14. My parents eventually admitted that they had another child who passed away before my twin sister and I were born. That in itself wasn't what made the situation terrifying. Tragically, that does happen. What made it disturbing was the fact that my sister and I somehow already knew. Yet our parents spent our entire lives convincing us we were mistaken. I'm not sure how we knew. Our brother passed away a year before we were born. We never met him. There were no photos, and he was never mentioned. Our parents and the rest of our family completely erased him from existence, which is actually very typical of our family dynamic. They shut down and erase anything they don't want to face. Still, from a young age, both my sister and I would talk about having a brother. Many of our childhood friends even knew about him. When it was finally revealed that we were only two siblings, people accused us of lying, but we genuinely believed it was true. Over the years, we confronted our parents multiple times. Every single time, they denied it. They swore we never had another sibling and that we were simply confused. But then one day, while they were drunk, we overheard them talking about him. We rushed in and confronted them, and they finally confessed. What's still unexplained is how we knew. We must have seen or heard something as toddlers that stuck with us subconsciously. But the most unsettling part is that even now, we both feel like they're still hiding something. We each have a vivid memory of playing with a slightly older boy when we were very young, and in that memory, we both believed he was our older brother. Story 15. I was at a bar with a coworker from the kitchen. He had apparently been stabbed during some kind of altercation years ago. I never asked him directly what it was about, but he always struck me as a kind of laid-back, hippie-type guy, into fish and widespread panic, seemed like a mellow stoner. I assumed it had just been a case of someone messing with him that escalated, though I didn't know for sure. That night at the bar, after a few shots, he told me that while he was in the hospital recovering from the stabbing, his older sister found the people who did it, and that they weren't alive anymore, or something to that effect. He talked about how dangerous she was and how she had connections to some very serious people. He actually passed away a few months ago suddenly, from what was said to be a stroke. He was only 38 at the time. He had been gone from the restaurant we worked at for a while. He'd been let go for drinking on the job. I assume his passing was random or related to something undiagnosed, but it still felt strange. He was an interesting guy. Story 16. One night I was at a bar in an affluent town when an older man next to me started talking about his sailing days. He said he owned a 60-foot sailboat and used to sail all over North and South America. His story took place in the mid-1980s. He said one night, while anchored near an island off the coast of Venezuela, he and his girlfriend had just fallen asleep when he heard a bump. At first, he didn't think much of it but decided to check. As he climbed the steep stairs from the cabin to the deck, like most sailboats have, he grabbed a pistol he always kept holstered on the railing. As he got halfway onto the deck, he saw a man climbing over the railing with what he described as an automatic weapon, something like an AR-15. He said he fired two rounds and the man fell back overboard. When he looked over the side, he saw that the man had landed in his own boat, and there was another armed man there as well. He said he shot that man, pulled up the anchor, and got out of there fast. He explained that pirate activity wasn't unheard of in that region, and that people would board sailboats, tie everyone up, take all their belongings, and sometimes even destroy the vessel with people still on board. That bump he heard had been their boat coming alongside his. He said that was the last time he ever visited South America. Story 17. Not terrifying, more heartbreaking. A few years ago, my dad came to talk to me while he was a little tipsy. He was trying to talk to me about my depression, which at the time was very new to us and difficult to open up about. Out of nowhere, he started crying. I had never seen my dad cry before. He told me that he met my mom when she was working as a dancer, and he was a bartender at the same club. He said he always regretted where they came from. They had both struggled with substance use before I was born, and that he wished he could take all of my pain away and bear it himself, because he knew how it felt. He said he was so desperate to make sure our family was financially stable and happy that he would have done anything to protect me from what I was going through. Until that moment, I had only ever seen him as a kind of annoying dad. I hadn't bonded with him much. But after that, I started to truly get to know him as more than just dad. Now he's my best friend. In a way, that one emotional moment changed everything and gave me the chance to have the healthiest relationship I've ever had with him. Story 18. My first college roommate got extremely drunk one night after his girlfriend broke up with him. While I was helping him into bed, he told me something horrifying. He confessed that he had taken advantage of her while she was passed out on medication when she was sick, and that it happened while I was asleep just 10 to 15 feet away from them. He described everything in disturbing detail. I felt terrible. A few weeks later, I found his ex on campus and told her what he had said and how I felt. It wasn't an easy conversation. She reassured me that she didn't hold me responsible for what happened, but I told her I would be willing to testify if she chose to report him and the case move forward. My roommate ended up leaving the university at the end of that semester. I had informed the school of what he confessed to, but he denied it and claimed I had coerced him into saying it while he was intoxicated. During the investigation, I switched roommates because of how passive-aggressive he became toward me. It still haunts me. I wish I hadn't been such a heavy sleeper. I might have been able to stop it. Even now, I carry some guilt about it. Years later, I was invited to her wedding. We caught up, and I got to know her husband, too. We had similar class schedules and would often talk and hang out. Story 19. It may not involve violence or crime, but a few months ago, my mom got drunk and high enough to finally tell me why my late grandmother treated her so horribly and made her life miserable for decades. It was about the house. When my grandparents divorced, my mom was 17, and her choice of which parent to live with would determine who got to keep the house. She chose my grandfather because he had a consistent 9-to-5 job, while my grandmother, as a reporter, could be gone at all hours. After that, my grandmother became extremely abusive and cruel toward her. Despite it all, my mom never abandoned her, even though I believe she should have. My grandmother lived with us from before I was born until she passed away in 2009. I was 15. Even as the grandchild she loved, growing up with her affected me so much that she became a regular topic in my therapy sessions. What scares me most is how much long-term emotional damage and abusive behavior stem from one decision, a decision forced upon a teenager who never should have had to make that choice. That night made me question my faith in people more than I'd like to admit. Story 20. I was at a bachelor party with an old friend from high school and a few other people we had grown up with, though I wouldn't call them friends. One of them had always been a loudmouth who thought he was tough. Right after high school, he went into the Marine Corps. I'll refer to him as FOF, friend of a friend. He had completed two tours in Afghanistan and was scheduled for a third, but instead he was back in the U.S. attending the party. After a night of gambling and drinking, he started telling us a story about a certain Afghan tribe in a remote province that allegedly abused and exploited children. He claimed that he and some fellow soldiers would shoot the tribe's livestock during patrols as target practice. Then he casually added, "And sometimes there are stray bullets." I later learned what that actually meant. He and his unit had opened fire on and killed several civilians. He never went on his third deployment because they were all court-martialed and dishonorably discharged, but no further charges were brought against them. Apparently, he had shot a child, claiming the child had a Sewick vest, but that was later found to be false. He is now a police officer and has been involved in 3 fatal shootings while on duty in the past 6 years. Each incident was ruled as self-defense, despite significant evidence suggesting otherwise. Story 21. Sometime shortly after Y2K, I went out drinking after work with some coworkers. One of them, a police officer we all liked, casually told me that he routinely harassed a group of well-known local transients, people struggling with addiction and homelessness. He admitted to regularly taking their belongings, alcohol, and other property, thinking it was funny. He rationalized his actions by claiming they were always involved in crime, stealing, dealing, and such, and that by targeting them, he was doing society a favor. I had never encountered police misconduct firsthand before, and his story gave me serious anxiety. That following Monday, I sought out the people he was targeting. I showed them a picture of the officer, gathered their statements, and was eventually able to secure a warrant for his arrest. Long story short, he was arrested when he showed up for work. He lost his job and went through a legal process afterward. While some coworkers distanced themselves from me, most supported me and the principle that no one should tolerate misconduct, especially from those in power. I don't regret it for a second. Story 22. Not exactly drunk, but maybe a little buzzed after a couple of beers. My late grandpa on my mom's side once told me a story about the twitch he had. As kids, my siblings and I would sneak up behind him and tap the back of his neck. He'd flinch, move his head, then give us a playful smile and say, "You better watch it," while we giggled. We never thought much of it. During my teenage years, I stayed with my grandparents for a summer visit. One evening, after a couple of beers, we were watching TV, and I casually asked why he always twitched when his neck was touched. That's when he opened up and told me he had served in Vietnam. He and some of his unit were captured, and on more than one occasion, he had a gun put to his neck, either while being marched or even while sleeping. Ever since then, he'd instinctively react whenever something touched that area. I felt awful hearing that and apologized, even though he said it was okay and that we never meant harm. After that, I never touched his neck again. Just thinking about what that must have triggered for him, it gave me a much deeper understanding and respect for what veterans carry with them for life. Story 23. One of my friends, let's call him Marcus, was dating a girl none of us liked. She was manipulative and often disrespectful, but we tolerated her out of respect for Marcus. At one party, she got completely blacked out. I was helping her to the bathroom when she suddenly said, "Man, I'm so sorry for what I'm about to do to Marcus." I asked her what she meant, and she confessed that a few weeks earlier, she had cheated on him, had unprotected S, and suspected she might be pregnant. Instead of coming clean, she planned to tell Marcus the child was his. I was in shock and beyond angry, but I kept things calm since she was clearly very drunk. I told Marcus what she had said and let him decide what to do with the information. A few days later, he told us that she admitted to everything and that he broke up with her. Story 24. I'm not sure if this is truly terrifying, but it has bothered me for years. Over 6 years ago, I rented a house with 3 other guys I knew fairly well. We hosted parties often. Eventually, we all started noticing things going missing. None of us suspected each other, so we assumed it must have been people from the parties. We moved on and stayed friends. Years later, I was at a bar and ran into a former high school classmate. Our school was small, so we all knew each other. This guy, who was in the police academy at the time, started joking about all the shady things he'd done and how wild it was that he was going to be a cop. He was drunk and began bragging about how he and a friend would go to house parties. One would distract guests with card tricks, while the other would sneak through the house stealing things. As he was talking, it all started clicking. He and his friend had been regulars at our parties, and one of them always wore a backpack. I confronted him then and there, and he left awkwardly. I never took it further, aside from telling my former housemates. He never became a cop, for reasons unknown, but the experience shook my trust in people and has stuck with me ever since as a painful lesson. Story 25. I work in physical therapy and once had a middle-aged male patient recovering from major surgery. His wife would often join him for sessions. One morning, however, another woman was in his room. Turned out to be his sister, who was visiting and wanted to watch. During the session, the man was acting a bit loopy, likely due to pain meds. Through conversation, I learned that her husband, his brother-in-law, was on his deathbed from a sudden illness. Out of nowhere, the patient said he had something he wanted to get off his chest. He revealed that, decades ago, he had been married to a different woman and divorced her. His family thought the marriage ended due to incompatibility, but in reality, he caught his current brother-in-law having an affair with his then-wife. He had never told anyone, not even his sister, and dropped this revelation right as her husband was about to pass away. She ran out of the room sobbing. The timing was brutal. He could have waited and spared her, but instead, he dropped a truth bomb that changed everything. Story 26. My spouse and I were a bit high while discussing internet safety for our kids. When he opened up about something that happened in his early teens, he used to roleplay on AOL message boards with a woman who eventually wanted to meet him. She drove to him, only to be shocked that he was just a teenager, while she was clearly in her 30s. Coincidentally and somewhat ironically, I had a similar experience as a teen. A guy I was talking to online lied about his age. When he showed up at my workplace one day, he looked close to 40. He tried convincing me he had a baby face and gave other excuses. But I instantly knew something was wrong. I cut contact immediately. Things could have gone very badly. No one even knew about him. Looking back, I'm really glad we had that conversation. It helped us reflect and be more open, not just with each other, but especially as parents. The internet felt like the Wild West back then, and we want our kids to be informed and safe in a way we weren't. Story 27. A close friend of mine moved from Florida all the way up to Wisconsin, but he rarely talked about why he left behind his friends and family. Every now and then, he would mention that he couldn't go back, that he wasn't allowed to see his daughter, and that he had a criminal record. But he never went into detail. One day, while we were drinking, he opened up out of nowhere. He told me he used to deal drugs, he wouldn't specify what, and that one day a group of men broke into his house. He owned a rifle and positioned himself in a back room. He said what stuck with him most was seeing someone rolling through a long, rectangular window. He didn't hear anything, just saw the movement, and he turned and shot the guy. Then another man came through the door, and he shot him too. That's all he shared. He wouldn't say more, and hasn't brought it up since. When I first met him, he gave me a fake name, and to this day, when he meets new people, he still introduces himself with fake names. Story 28. I got drunk with a good friend I hadn't seen in a while over the holidays. He confessed to me that he regretted becoming a father. He has 3 young kids, and he said it's the biggest mistake he's ever made, but he feels too deep into it now to do anything about it. He told me he hates his life as a father and drinks himself to sleep every night to avoid thinking about it. He cried the entire time, and I could tell it was really hurting him. I didn't know what to say, so I just let him talk. I've personally never wanted kids. I've known this since I was about 10 or 11, and I'm very open about it, which is probably why he felt safe telling me. He's afraid that our other friends, most of whom have kids, would judge or even shun him. Honestly, they probably would. Some young parents can be incredibly judgmental. The way they've criticized me for not wanting children speaks for itself. I've never told anyone because it's not my place. What really shocked me is that he's an amazing father. His kids adore him. He has a solid relationship with his girlfriend, and they've been together for over 10 years. He does everything for his children. At first, I thought he was just venting, but I realized he really wasn't. He's just been hiding it all very well. I think the pandemic and the state of the world have taken a toll on him, and probably on a lot of young parents too. Story 29. I know a Vietnam veteran who goes by the name Soldier. He struggled with addiction and spent a lot of time on the streets, but he was kind. He used to take out our trash for a few bucks, and over time, we got to know him well. Locals told us that even as a child, something was always off about Soldier. He was never quite stable and probably should never have been drafted, but he was. He served in Vietnam. One day during a barbecue at my place, he joined us for some beer pong, grilled food, and a little weed. He was having a great time and began telling us stories. He said he operated a tank during the war. One day, a sniper took out the tank's tracks, and they had to evacuate. On his way out, he was grazed in the shoulder and head. The next thing he remembered was waking up in a Vietnamese village, wounded but being taken care of. He said the villagers fed him, cared for him, and kept telling him, "Go home. This is not your war." Not long after, he woke up to the sound of helicopters and gunfire. American forces were attacking the village. He tried to stop them, but couldn't. He said he picked up a rocket launcher and fired at his own helicopters to defend the only people who had ever shown him kindness. He was later discharged. He lives on the streets and never learned to read. One day he brought me a letter from the government about his benefits being held up pending appeal. I was just a teen when I read it for him. He had been waiting for years. I don't see him anymore. Just the occasional mugshot on arrest pages. I don't know if he ever got the help or money he was owed. But every time we drank together, he'd get emotional, tell everyone he loved and appreciated them, and repeat that story. It never changed. Story 30. I went to a Halloween party several years ago, and later that night, a group of about 20 people had gathered around a fire pit outside. Everyone was chatting in small groups, as is typical at parties. I stepped inside for a bit, and when I came back about 10 minutes later, things had changed. Instead of people talking in groups, the crowd was almost entirely silent, listening to one very intoxicated guy telling a story. I didn't know the guy and later found out that, aside from his girlfriend, no one else at the party knew him either. So there he was, telling this deeply personal story to about 20 complete strangers. What was the story? It was about a family vacation to Europe when he was a teenager, and how during that trip he was assaulted by a man. As the story progressed and it became clear where it was going, his girlfriend tried to gently intervene. She said things like, "Are you sure you want to tell this now? And maybe wait until we get home." But he kept going, telling the entire story in a vivid detail. When he finished, he said something like, "I can't believe I actually got all that out. I've never told anyone." It was hard to describe the atmosphere. Awkward, emotional, overwhelming. I felt horrible for him and truly hoped sharing helped him in some way. But knowing how drunk he was and hearing that it was his first time telling anyone, I can't help but think that waking up the next morning must have been devastating. I'm not judging him. I just hope he was comfortable with how and where he shared his truth. Story 31. A friend called me one night asking if he could crash at my place. When he arrived, I learned that he and his wife had been drinking with neighbors when she said she was stepping out to get cigarettes. She was gone longer than expected and wasn't answering her phone, so he drove to the gas station and found her in a car with another man. He was devastated. The police got involved, and they ended up dropping him off at my house, which was about 20 minutes away in a different suburb. They already had a daughter at the time and later had a son. I thought he would divorce her, but they stayed together. He made me swear never to tell anyone, and I kept that promise for 4 years. We aren't even that close. He didn't call me first, but I was the only one who knew. Since then, his drinking worsened, and he'd occasionally start arguments when drunk, including at a friend's wedding. I was the only one who knew what was going on, so I felt responsible for helping him hold things together. He once told me the only reason they stayed together was for their kids. A few months ago, another friend mentioned that he had recently gotten extremely drunk and became unresponsive. His wife called for help, and our friend told him that she had cheated on him multiple times. I had only known about one of the incidents. One affair had taken place when he moved to a different city for a job, and she stayed behind for a few months. That friend was shocked I hadn't told my wife. He had already told his. That night, I finally shared everything with my wife. We still see this couple regularly. I don't think his wife knows that I know. Most of our friends just see him get drunk and act out, but have no idea why. I still have to keep quiet and act like I don't have serious reservations about her. Story 32. One night, I was out drinking at our small local bar with my cousin. His girlfriend of many years, whom I've known for a long time, came to pick us up. She was good friends with the bartender, so after her shift ended, we all stayed and drank even more. Eventually, my cousin, his girlfriend, and I left to grab McDonald's and then came back to my house to crash. We were all pretty drunk. At some point that night, My cousin suddenly told me he knew I'd always had feelings for his girlfriend. He said if I wanted her, he'd walk home and leave her to me. It was a bizarre moment. He had never shown any signs of resentment or distrust before. The next day when I brought it up, he got more upset, insisting that I was accusing him of something. Later I found out he had told his brothers, who are also my friends, that he never liked when she would come smoke alone with me. She was a pizza delivery driver, and I would sometimes step outside with her for a break before she left. That conversation has affected my relationship with both of them and with my extended friend group ever since. Story 33. A close friend of a friend shared something deeply unsettling after a music festival. We were coming down from an MDMA roll, and he had also been drinking heavily. As we were walking back to our Airbnb, he was visibly out of it. He's Korean, and when I first met him, he'd occasionally rant about how much he disliked white women, calling them fake and shallow. At first I thought it was just weird humor, but it quickly got old. Over time, it got so extreme that if someone had told me he had seriously hurt someone, I wouldn't have been surprised. I would have even felt guilty for not reporting the way he talked. That day, it got even worse. We were walking through a crowd of mostly young people, and a girl accidentally bumped into him. He immediately turned around and cocked his fist as if to hit her. I grabbed his arm just in time to stop him. He was furious and shouted things like, "Why'd hurt her?" White girls think they can say and do whatever they want. Then he added something personal and self-deprecating about his body that just came out of nowhere. It was disturbing and really changed how I saw him. That moment stuck with me as a harsh reminder that people can carry deep resentment and instability beneath the surface. Story 34. My paternal grandmother was not financially stable, but she was the most caring grandparent a child could ever hope to have. My nuclear family was solidly middle class while I was growing up, so I didn't realize until adolescence that she was constantly buying things she couldn't afford to spoil her five grandchildren. We all had a baby's day out sleepover at her tiny house one weekend per month until we started driving. She would pull us out of school on our birthdays and bring us home with new video games and a month's worth of treats. She gave the coolest gifts at Christmas. She also cared for my adult aunt with Down syndrome. Even though both of them had serious health issues that should have warranted in-home nursing care. I say all this to make clear how deeply her devotion shaped our childhood happiness. She was a bit of a hypochondriac, reckless with money, and had a way of guilting my dad into maintaining toxic relationships in the extended family. But I loved her fiercely and considered her a saint throughout my youth. Things became rocky in our immediate family just before I left for college. And her calls were the only ones I was always happy to answer. The gifts tapered off after graduation, but the love never did. After undergrad, her health declined rapidly. I started scheduling long weekends off work to drive home and spend time with her, knowing our time was limited. On my second to last visit, she was clearly under the influence of prescribed palliative medication from the moment I arrived. I didn't mind. We sat on the couch for hours just talking. When she fell quiet, I'd reminisce about childhood sleepovers, and it seemed to bring her joy. I half-jokingly asked, "What made you spoil us so much growing up?" Her face turned solemn, and in a near whisper, she said, "Because my marriages cheated your father of a childhood." She began to reveal the darker corners of our family history. All three of her husbands, including my biological grandfather, had been abusive in different ways. I had known some of this, but not the most horrifying parts. Her second husband, my aunt's biological father, was the worst. He had severe substance abuse issues, and when using, he became violent. She would send him on fishing trips just to protect the household. One night, he sped into the driveway, screaming threats. He had a butcher's cleaver and a coil of rope, saying he would end everyone in the house and dump their bodies over a nearby dam. My grandmother and my uncle, who was only 12 at the time, defended their home with a 12-gauge shotgun and a .30-06 rifle. Before he reached the porch, they stopped him. The police arrived, removed the body, and that was it. I was stunned. Hearing such traumatic family history was shocking enough. But finding out this gentle, loving woman had survived so much and even had to resort to violence to protect her children, it left me speechless. A few weeks later, I returned to visit again. But EMS had arrived 10 minutes before I did. She had collapsed in the living room, and my aunt found her. That was the last real conversation I had with my grandmother, outside of a few love you, miss you voicemails. Story 35. A while back, my cousin B had been hanging out with cousin A. They aren't siblings. They had drinks, talked, and caught up like old times. Immediately afterward, cousin B called me. After 20 minutes of hesitation, trying to decide whether he should tell me, he finally said it. Cousin A had confided in him that she had been assaulted by her older brother, cousin D. The shock hit hard. Cousin D lives near me, and he's been very close friends with cousin B for the past 5 years. Worse, cousin D is seen as the golden child in our extended family. Among the aunts and uncles, he's the cherished nephew. Among the cousins, he's the favorite. We come from a large family, and he's regularly invited to dinners, often acts as a babysitter, and is especially close to the younger cousins, particularly the younger girls. I've never known what to do with this information. I've always been uncomfortable with how involved he is with the younger kids, but I don't have proof, just the weight of a secret that has never left my mind. Story 36. I had a feeling something was off in my marriage. So one day we took the kids to a local park, and I suggested we have a few drinks together. She agreed, and as she started to relax, she opened up. That's when she told me she needed to be with other people and apologized. She said we got married too young, and now she had the desire to seek out random encounters. I was stunned, and that's when I found out she had already been seeing someone else for months. She told me that she would leave work to be with him. Even on days when the kids really missed her, she admitted to things that shattered me. On one occasion after seeing him, she came home and acted like nothing had happened. What she revealed made me feel utterly humiliated and betrayed. She never once seemed to care about the damage she caused. Since that day, I've been struggling with intense depression. What she did broke me. She didn't even blink while telling me all of this. She checks every box of a textbook narcissist. There was so much more she did that if I wrote it all down, people would think it was fiction because of how cruel and unbelievable it all sounds. She is, without a doubt, one of the most heartless people I've ever known. Story 37. It wasn't something confessed to me directly, but I overheard my drunk mom tell her friends that she wished she had aborted me because I ruined her life. For context, I was a very well-behaved child and teenager, especially compared to my younger sister, who has always been extremely difficult, and whom my parents worship. When she was younger, she had selective mutism and anxiety so intense that she would frequently break out in hives. I, on the other hand, have ADHD, something my parents don't even believe exists. It was never treated until I took action myself as an adult. Anytime I so much as came close to misbehaving, I was immediately punished. I learned to mask my behavior at a young age, so much so that I didn't even realize I was masking. Anytime I showed signs of ADHD around them, I was told I was either stupid, faking it, or asked, "What's wrong with you?" Meanwhile, my sister received years of expensive therapy, the best of everything, and endless parental devotion. All of their weekends, and by default, mine, were spent at her swim meets. They couldn't even commit to keeping me in one non-competitive dance class. My sister went to college for a pastry arts degree, and was constantly praised for being a 4.0 student. Meanwhile, I was struggling to earn 2 accounting degrees while dealing with an undiagnosed learning disability, and all I got was criticism. My sister's teenage years were a nightmare. She was frequently disrespectful, once threw clothes out of the car because she didn't want to go to a restaurant, and tried to physically hurt me on multiple occasions over trivial things like saying, "Good morning." She once attempted to attack me with utensils while my parents were gone. Another time while I was driving, she yanked the steering wheel, nearly causing an accident, all because I changed our parking spot while she and her friend were shopping. I even texted her a picture of where I moved the car, but she didn't check her phone and got lost in the parking lot. People outside our family have commented on how obvious the favoritism is. Today, my sister is unemployed, hasn't worked in 2 years, and isn't planning to anytime soon, even after finishing her RN last year, because she refuses to get vaccinated due to her and my parents' political beliefs. Despite doing nothing with her degree, they constantly brag about her becoming an RN. Meanwhile, I've managed to increase my salary by $12,000, bought a car, bought a house, and maintained peace with my husband despite the way my sister treats me. Yet somehow, I'm still the one they blame for everything. They even openly say that my sister is the bitchy one and I'm the nice one, but she's still the one they favor, and I'm still the so-called life ruiner. They know the truth, yet I'm always the villain in whatever version of events they tell others. I've gone through years of emotional damage because of them, and as an adult, it has ruined my ability to form any healthy connection with parental figures or older people. I don't even have children, though I want them, because I'm terrified of treating them the way I was treated. Story 38. It wasn't really a terrifying confession, but a terrifying experience that came as a result of it. My fiancé and I were staying at a motel while looking for an apartment. There was a bar on the lower level, and his close friend and that friend's fiancé lived in the apartments next to the motel. We would all hang out often. One day, while my fiancé was out, his friend came over, knocked on the door, and asked if I wanted to go to the bar with him. He said he didn't want to go alone because he had bad social anxiety. I was hesitant and about to decline, but before I could say anything, he pushed the door open further and let himself in, then flopped onto the bed. At that point, I could tell he had already been drinking. I started to feel uncomfortable and didn't want to be alone in the room with him. Being shy and caught off guard, I agreed to go downstairs, thinking being around other people would be safer. In my flustered state, I forgot the room key and the door locked automatically behind us. As soon as we left the room, he kept asking for hugs, which made me feel even more uneasy. Down at the bar, he started ordering drinks for me. I refused several times, but he insisted, saying he'd put them on his fiancé's tab. Even when I didn't drink what he ordered, he kept ordering more. He began asking personal questions about my relationship, trying to find issues or weaknesses, and then placed his hand on my leg. Things got increasingly uncomfortable as he confessed that he liked me and began talking about problems in his own relationship. He repeatedly told me not to tell my fiancé, his best friend. Even though there were people in the bar, it was a small place, and I was terrified. Thankfully, he eventually went to the restroom, and I used that moment to run to the motel office and ask for a new room key. The woman at the front desk gave me one immediately, and I realized he'd probably notice I had left, so I ran into the woods behind the motel to hide for a moment. I called my fiancé, told him everything, and he told me to return to the room, lock the door, and wait for him to get back. As I walked back down the motel hallway, I saw his friend coming from the opposite end. He ran to the door before I could unlock it and begged me not to leave or tell anyone what had happened. I told him I didn't want to hang out and just wanted to go back inside. He punched the wall right next to my head, but I managed to get inside and lock the door. Then he left. A few minutes later, my fiancé got home. As I was explaining everything, the doorknob started turning. Someone was trying to get in. My fiancé opened the door, and his friend was shocked to see him there. My fiancé told him to leave, but the guy kept saying, "Fight me," and tried to push past him. My fiancé shut the door and locked it again. Then the guy headbutted the door and broke it down. He was a large man, easily 200 pounds heavier than my fiancé, and they started fighting, rolling on the floor. I was screaming and ran down to the bar to get help. The motel owner, his son, and a friend all came upstairs, and it took all three of them to hold the man down. They had to sit on him to restrain him. The police and paramedics arrived. He was bleeding and began spitting on them while shouting delusional things, including claiming I was his girlfriend. I'm incredibly thankful my fiancé got home when he did. Story 39. While completely drunk, my mom opened up to me in detail about the abuse she suffered in her childhood. I always knew something had happened, but not to the extent she described. She was assaulted repeatedly into her mid-20s, even after having my older sister and becoming pregnant with my brother. She was beaten daily. When my dad learned she was pregnant, he questioned whether my brother was even his. When he confronted her father, he was beaten so badly that he ended up in a coma. My mom's mother knew about everything and did absolutely nothing to stop it. In fact, she even took part in the abuse. My mom had two older brothers and a sister. One brother was occasionally beaten, and the others were left alone. My mom can be difficult to deal with on a normal day, but now I understand why. She stayed silent for so many years, and now she says exactly what's on her mind. She works as a social worker, helping families with disabled children and often supporting survivors of assault. She's truly a saint, always trying to do good. I don't refer to her parents as my grandparents. I hate them. Her father was jailed and died disgraced. Her mother is still alive. About 17 years ago, my mom tried to rebuild a relationship with her and involved us in it. I tried for her, but I couldn't do it. In my eyes, that woman can suffer the way she made my mother suffer. She never once apologized. Story 40. While traveling in Laos with a buddy and a girl from the U.S., who had Laotian heritage and whom we met along the way, we were having drinks in our room. The conversation took a dark turn when she started opening up. She told us that she had been assaulted by two male friends in her college dorm room and that she had experienced other abuse she didn't want to talk about. My friend and I were stunned. We'd never heard someone share something like that so openly before. What surprised us even more was what happened afterward. She tried to initiate something physical with both of us, suggesting a threesome. We respectfully declined, especially given what she had just shared. Looking back, I recognized that her behavior, combined with her past, was likely a reflection of deep-rooted trauma, possibly manifesting as compulsive behavior or attachment issues. It broke my heart. I didn't want to keep partying, but we did anyway. The days that followed led me to one of the lowest emotional points in my own life, something I've never told anyone until now. It gave me a bittersweet and painful realization about how trauma continues to echo through people's lives, and how much hurt often hides behind a smile or a story. Story 41. I was couch surfing my way through Japan about 12 years ago and spent some time in Nara with a woman who offered to host me. I'm not sure whether it matters, but just in case of cultural context, I'll mention that she was Indonesian with permanent residency in Japan, not Japanese. She was incredibly beautiful, charismatic, and intelligent. She owned a small dance studio, and that's where I slept, on a mat laid out on the studio floor. It worked well for me, as I was also a dancer at the time. The only odd thing I noticed was her lack of friends. She never mentioned any, and I never saw her interact with anyone socially. After a couple of days in Nara, during which I enjoyed sightseeing and spending time with her, we went out one night for sake. As the drinks flowed, her polished and charming demeanor started to shift. She had previously told me about how she and her former best friend were supposed to take a vacation together in northern Japan, but he had canceled. She expressed feeling hurt.
This is an ad by Regain Couples Therapy.
Let's be honest. Loving your partner doesn't mean you always like them, and guess what? That's normal. Regain offers couples therapy that's flexible, affordable, and 100% online.
Whether you're reconnecting or working through conflict, Regain is here to support you both.
See why people wish they'd try couples therapy sooner. Visit regain.com/couplespod to get 10% off your first month. That's regain.com/couplespod.
Lowe's knows how to set off your July 4th with savings. Right now, buy one, get one free on select one-coat coverage interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Plus, get two select 2 or 2.5-quart red, white, and blue annuals for just $10. Hurry, these July 4th deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, excludes Alaska and Hawaii. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for more details.
Claiming he was flaky and inconsiderate, she said she really needed that vacation to relax and was upset that she now had to go alone. The way she told it, he had betrayed their friendship. But that night, with alcohol loosening her filters, she elaborated. The reason her friend canceled was because he had recently been diagnosed with cancer. He had been feeling unwell from chemotherapy and didn't think he could travel. Her reaction? Anger. She said his illness ruined her plans and called him selfish for focusing on himself instead of her. Then she said something that left me frozen. "Sometimes I imagine I'm the angel of death," she said, "and I come down and cover his mouth during the night until he dies." I didn't know how to respond. First, because I was suddenly convinced she had serious psychological issues, maybe even sociopathy. Second, because my own best friend from childhood had died from cancer as a young adult, and her words cut deeper than she could have imagined. I was filled with anger and disbelief, but it was late at night and I had nowhere else to go. All my belongings were still at her studio, so I kept my reaction neutral and said as little as possible. I was originally supposed to spend one more night there and even attend one of her dance classes. Instead, I left early the next morning. I packed up and got out without saying goodbye. I didn't want anything more to do with her. Story 42. My uncle is a Vietnam veteran. One night, after a few drinks, he confessed to me that part of the reason he never talks about that chapter of his life is because he actually doesn't remember much of it. He said he was grateful for that, because forgetting allowed him to move on and live a relatively normal life. He had seen so many other veterans get trapped in their memories, unable to escape the nightmares. They never found peace, and some were ultimately consumed by what they had experienced. But when the Vietnam War Memorial, the wall in D.C. with the names of the fallen, was built, he made a trip to see it. He went there to look for the names of the men in his squad. The men he had crawled through mud with, shared awful rations with, endured hell with, his brothers in arms. But as he stood there staring at the wall, he realized something devastating. He didn't recognize a single name, not one. He was left just staring at row after row of unfamiliar names, unable to remember the very people he had survived beside. I can't even imagine that kind of survivor's guilt, especially without the comfort of memory, without the ability to say, "At least I remember them." My heart aches thinking about how alone and shaken he must have felt in that moment. He survived, yes, but at what cost? And he admitted he was too afraid to open that part of his mind again, too afraid of what it might do to him. He built a life, a career, a marriage, a family, and opening that door might destroy all of it. It's like a triple layer of survivor's guilt. One, for surviving the war when others didn't. Two, for building a life when so many other veterans died alone and forgotten. And three, for choosing not to remember, out of fear that remembering would cost him everything. It's layers upon layers of trauma. It just goes to show, no one really survives war. Even the ones who seem fine, who look put together, who smile and move on, carry it with them. It gets inside you, and it never really leaves. Story 43. One time I pulled an all-nighter at the recording studio. I left to go to 7-Eleven to grab a Gatorade, and to get there, you have to cross a small wooden bridge. As I was passing the bridge, I saw a man, probably in his 50s, wearing a red flannel shirt. He looked at me with bright eyes and said, "Beautiful day, isn't it?" I replied, "Yes, sir, it is," while also thinking to myself, "Why is this guy standing under a bridge at this hour?" I walked away, but about 30 seconds after our brief exchange, I heard a loud blast. A minute later, four police cars showed up. It turns out the man had taken his own life, right there, under the bridge. The police questioned me since I had been nearby, but they later determined that he had a documented history of mental health struggles and had made threats in the past. It was a surreal moment. Knowing I was likely the last person to speak to him haunts me sometimes. If I had known what he was thinking, I would have done anything I could to try to help. Rest in peace.